You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
Eyes turn to blue and starry nights as our voices start to rise. We're ending an apartheid.
Green Left Weekly Radio.
There's one newspaper that is independent of powerful capitalist interests, and that is Green Left Weekly.
It's the people's voice, committed to human and civil rights, ecological sustainability, democracy and equality. It presents ideas that the mainstream media won't.
Green Left is a leading source of local, national and international news with analysis, discussion and debate to strengthen the anti-capitalist movement.
It helps expose the lies of the capitalist press and puts the voices of the marginalised and the oppressed at the centre of fighting for a better world and helps us understand the political developments unfolding around us.
Good morning. You are listening to Green Left Radio on 3CR 855 AM on your dial. This is your inculcation station for all things left-wing, radical and grassroots. So joining us this morning, we have...
myself, Jacob Andrewarfer, who's one of your co-presenters for this program.
And Stephanie.
And I am Jordan, a.k.a. Big Shooks. And we've got an exciting program for you this morning, Friday, 27th of June. We're going to be talking a bit about the anti-Semitism plan that's expected to be handed down by the envoy for anti-Semitism. We have a couple of interviews lined up that I'm sure listeners will find very exciting. We'll have some music. We'll have some, political discussions and maybe even a little bit of banter. Now, before we get into our headline discussion, I'll pass over to my esteemed co-presenter, Stephanie, for a little acknowledgement of country.
Not esteemed enough. I think I should have had a shower to wake me up. But anyway,
a stinky, not a stinky.
It's a bad joke. So 3CR and Green Left recognise that this show is being broadcasted from the land of the Wurundjeri Woiwurrung people, the original, the rightful sovereign owners, storytellers and caretakers of the land. Australia was founded on the genocide and dispossession of the first people, and we recognise that this genocide is ongoing. As socialists, we pledge to actively support decolonisation. We stand with all the first peoples of the world in their struggle for justice and right to their land.
Yeah, thanks for that, Stephanie. So, We're going to head into our first news item now, and we're going to pass over to Jacob to get us started on that discussion.
Yeah, so this is going to be, I guess, a subject of a bigger discussion that is going to probably recur for like the next several months or even the next year. I mean, this has obviously been one of the big things about the Palestine Solidarity Movement has been that there has been this conscious attempt by the ruling class and politicians all over the world to conflate anti-Semitism with pro-Palestine activism, and in fact there is some disturbing developments coming up with the government bringing in this very sweeping kind of anti-Semitism plan that is expected to be handed down by the government's envoy to combat anti-Semitism, Gillian Seagull. And one of the things as well is the plan includes a whole range of measures. It includes recommendations on public broadcasting, migration, law enforcement training, and a number of other issues that have been a subject of debate for more than a year. Now, this plan has been in development since her appointment a year ago, and in fact it was in the process of being kind of unveiled, but I think the recent sort of burning down of the Melbourne synagogue and of course the protest against the Israeli owned restaurant Mizzen has sort of spurred this. Although before I kind of start, I'd also like to point out that, you know, I think it's quite disgraceful that, you know, the media has tried to conflate this protest against the Israeli restaurant Mizon with the burning of the synagogue. Like, I think there's been a lot of conflation in the corporate media, and I think the kind of corporate class, you know, the corporate elite are attempting to kind of do that. Like, a lot of the people in power, they're very much trying to conflate those two things. But actually, at the end of the day, I mean, really, the main reason that the restaurant was protested against on Friday was because the owner of the establishment, Shahar Siegel, is also the spokesperson for the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, which is an aid aid agency operating in the Gaza Strip that has essentially been complicit as a front for the killing of Palestinians.
Yeah, more than 600 Palestinians, probably closer to 700 at this point, have been murdered there, and like thousands and thousands have been injured. It's being called, genocide baited by bread. Horrific, and the fact that the corporate media seems so interested in sensationalizing the actions of these activists on Friday night is utterly disgraceful, when they completely ignore in their reporting the role that GHF is actually playing in violently murdering and essentially torturing Palestinians.
Yeah. So maybe I'll just respond by actually pointing out some of the good news story before I go into the rest of the bad news with this anti-Semitism envoy. But, you know, one of the interesting things that has happened has been that I just mentioned that Shahar Siegel was the spokesperson for the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, the GHF. But he has actually since withdrawn from the position. Mm. Clearly, in response to a certain level of pressure that has been brought about by this, by the protest, but also the fact that there was already a boycott campaign of his restaurant that was sort of making the rounds on social media. So I think, you know, the fact is, I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, I'm sure the owner still hasn't like changed his views. I'm pretty sure he's very much still a Zionist of a particular kind of character or persuasion. But I think it just shows that this is an element of what we were kind of talking about last week when it comes to, and in fact, we're going to have a further discussion with Michaela, who's one of our interviews later on about this, but it does actually show that the kind of strength of the Palestine movement. So, you know, while this, while the attack, while, you know, the kind of attack on the protest movement that's coming down from this anti-Semitism plan to address anti-Semitism is obviously a bit of a step back. The fact is, we're still, the Palestine movement still has the moral authority on certain questions. And the fact that, you know, this person can just withdraw out of just from very simple political pressure, I think is a positive sign. And, you know, I think it's something we have to take as a, you know, a bit of a small victory. Yeah. But I guess now, talking about the...
Well, maybe it's just also worth bearing down on another point here with this Mizon thing as well, just because you've talked about it before we jump away. I think the key thing here as well is that the protesters there, this was not some anti-Semitic protest as well. As you said, there was a boycott there, and this has actually resulted in the owner capitulating to pressure. This was tied to an anti-genocide movement. And, you know, the media's attempt to conflate the synagogue burning, and it's also worth mentioning the synagogue wasn't burnt down, the door sustained some damage, with this Mizon protest, in an attempt to actually portray the Palestine solidarity movement as a whole and any pro-Palestine or anti-Israel sentiment as anti-Semitic, is utterly disgraceful, and particularly when you've seen the reporting and the, you know, the outpour from politicians about this synagogue arson attack, yet they've failed to actually substantially comment on, you know, the destruction of how many mosques in Palestine, and not just mosques, you know, churches, hospitals, schools, places of gathering, recreations, homes, social space, the environment, and yet this door being burnt in East Melbourne is of far more, you know, importance to them than any of that. So yeah. I think that's quite revealing.
Yeah.
And so just talking about going on about this sort of plan to kind of address anti-Semitism. So this is some of the reporting that has kind of come out about it. But essentially, I mean, I'll read from a bit of a statement from Max Kayser, who has read the document. But basically, he states that he's the executive officer from the Jewish Council of Australia, and he basically argues that this document reads more like a blueprint for silencing dissent rather than a strategy to build inclusion. The report's vague language around anti-Semitic narratives or affiliations, coupled with its emphasis on the discredited IHRA definition of anti-Semitism, make the actions recommended dangerously unclear. Consistent with her past statements, erroneously linking anti-Semitic attacks with Palestine solidarity protests, Sagal seems fixated on driving a pro-Israel narrative and repressing legitimate criticism of Israel's genocide in Gaza. He ends by saying anti-Semitism is real and must be taken seriously, but it does not exist in a vacuum. Any response that treats anti-Semitism as exceptional while ignoring Islamophobia, anti-Palestinian activism, anti-Palestinian racism and other forms of hate is doomed to fail. So, yeah, I definitely find a lot to kind of agree with in terms of Max's statements, in terms of, you know, what I've read of the document. But the document includes a number of measures where, so here's one example, well, two examples I'll give to kind of open up the discussion, because obviously I won't have time to go through the whole document. But one example of what one of the recommendations that this document kind of makes is it can essentially give the government the power to kind of withdraw funding from any kind of cultural kind of institution that might be seen as critical of Israel in some way, or something of what the government defines as anti-Semitic. And if they're using the IHRA definition of anti-Semitism, essentially that means any kind of criticism of Israel that refers to, say, Israel as a settler colonial state or a racist endeavor would be considered anti-Semitic by this sort of so-called anti-Semitism sort of task force. Then there's another issue that's coming up with this, which is the issue of migration. And so essentially, this document points out that the government will have the right to interview potential migrants or immigrants who come to so-called Australia on the basis of their statements or their affiliations on whether they have been aligned themselves with anti-Semitic sort of activity. Now, in actual fact, how this could play out in practice is, you know, someone, maybe a notable Palestine solidarity activist who might visit Australia or might try to attempt to migrate here, their history of advocacy for Palestine might be measured against these sort of policies.
Yeah.
And so I think, yeah, this is, I think this is a very, as sort of Max Kayser sort of says, I mean, this is a very, I think this is a very dangerous direction and, yeah, runs the risk of very much criminalizing dissent. And also I think, you know, we haven't even talked about the fact that in the state of, in the Victorian context, the Victorian government's also looking at its sort of own sort of measures in terms of implementing this, and they're exploring like things like introducing permits for protests, and so yeah, there's a lot at stake here for the Palestine Solidarity Movement. I think this stuff has to be kind of actively kind of resisted.
Yeah, absolutely, for the Palestine Solidarity Movement. But as we can see, you know, this is also somewhat of a test run for stymieing protests in other movements, and it would not be a surprise to see some of these measures, particularly when we talk about, you know, the need for these permits and so forth to start popping up in climate rallies or rallies against police brutality, you know, and things like that. So we are actually running out of time for our headline discussions. do we have any final comments before we go to a song and then move on to our first interview for this morning?
Well, I think I was just going to add to what you were saying, Jordan, just around how, like, this is a huge risk to civil liberties and the right to protest, of course. And like, we know how much the Allen government would love a permit system. They would love to be able to control how people can resist, and the already very stymied and limited ways that we have available to us to be able to participate in a very undemocratic system. So it's concerning. This is quite a racist direction, actually. I'm just going to call it out for what it is. I think that, what's being proposed here with the anti-Semitism plan is racist.
I wouldn't disagree with that. We're going to move into our first song of this morning. We have Antarctica by King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard. Hope you enjoy.
Thank you.
welcome back to the studio. You're listening to Green Left Radio, 8:55 a.m. on your dial. And we just heard Antarctica by Gizzard, King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard. Wow, what a tongue twister that is. And that song is about climate change, if you weren't listening to the lyrics, which seemed quite, very direct. So now we're going to cross to an interview with Nikki Kathleen. So Nikki is a childcare worker and delegate with the United Workers Union, and she will be discussing just the awful challenges that are facing workers in the childcare sector, and that are obviously having a massive impact on families throughout Australia. So welcome, Nikki.
Hi.
How are you this fine morning?
Oh, pretty good. It's a cold morning, but we get things done.
Yeah, for sure. So in the past several weeks, obviously, there has been a lot of reports about the crisis in childcare sector, including some awful stories around sexual abuse of children. But we know that there's a big context in terms of really poor working conditions for childcare workers too. And so I was just wondering, what are some of the comments and what are the root causes of those issues that you're experiencing?
Well, we know that this crisis didn't a couple weeks ago or a couple months ago when the Four Corners special aired, or even a couple years ago. This crisis goes back all the way to the deregulation of early childhood education ownership and the rise of for-profit centers in the sector. Mm. So a lot of issues stem from the idea that everything needs to be for-profit and that somehow education is one of those things, and that education of young, vulnerable children should be farmed out to the person who's going to make the most money for their shareholders and the least amount of money for the workers actually taking care of it.
So the question that we'll get with is, can you comment further on the issue of for-profit childcare, including the issues with private training operators and lack of adequate staffing?
Oh, so for-profit childcare centers seem to be the norm these days, and they are the entire issue with the sector. You have these centers that run at minimum ratios or even out of ratios with waivers that are doing this to bring maximum profits to their shareholders and don't even properly pay for food for children in the centers. You have kitchens with budgets of 50 cents per child per day or less, trying to feed 120, 130, 150 children in these mass giant childcare centers. There's one that I pass regularly called Little Assets. It's a disgusting name for a sector that is meant to be about education and care of our most vulnerable. And then you have these RTOs out there that, again, are just money-making schemes, but they're money-making schemes that particularly target migrant communities who have vulnerable people within them themselves who are looking for visa pathways. It's a rort on the entire system. And these training facilities are not training educators properly. They're making it through with, again, bare minimums, with education that is quite frankly wrong in the sector. It's not best practice. It's not even good practice. It's sending these vulnerable educators into vulnerable situations with vulnerable children, and it's got to stop.
Yeah, so that's a perfect kind of segue in, I guess, to the kind of next kind of question, because I guess in response to the kind of horrifying cases of sexual abuse with that that kind of recent case that's obviously been making the headlines in the past several weeks, there has been some calls, like from more kind of the mainstream sections about things such as, you know, I read in the kind of Herald Sun, like there's some calls to kind of like ban males in childcare centres. Some private childcare centres have implemented measures such as preventing males from doing nappy changes and so on. And also there's also things like being discussed, like the implementation of CCTV cameras in childcare centres. Although it was sort of funny, I read one report from one childcare centre that sort of admitted that, oh, yeah, we have CCTV cameras, but we probably won't use them anyway, because, I mean, I imagine you even using CCTV cameras involves certain level of resources in terms of monitoring that for-profit childcare centre is not willing to kind of do. So I guess I want to kind of hear, what is your response to some of that kind of knee-jerk sort of reaction and some of those sort of solutions that are kind of being put forward?
Well, none of them listen to educators, because educators can tell you exactly what needs to happen. We need better training. We need more training. We need centers that are not focused on profit. And we need centers that are focused on children's safety over everything else. So CCTV cameras don't focus on children's safety. And you have not just operators saying that they're going to bring in CCTV, but you have government officials saying CCTV should be mandated. And that is actually a recipe for disaster. We've already seen one hack within this last week of CCTV in early childhood settings. And that's just going to get worse if they're implemented in all centers. But they also won't stop any of these problems, because we've got the footage that was shown on the Four Corners special from CCTV. It didn't stop it. It's just evidence after the fact. The same with banning male educators. It's, one, sexist, but two, it just amplifies the problem. Like, we need actually more male educators in the field to fight these problems. We need that to be a normalized thing, so that when male educators are in spaces, families trust them. Because, again, with 2-4% of the population of educators being male, the vast majority of issues happening in childcare centers are being perpetrated by women. The issue is not the gender of the educator. It's the power imbalance. And the only way you can get rid of that power imbalance is by education, by proper education, and by a regulatory authority that actually does what it needs to do.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess, I mean, just to make one comment here following from your comments there, I mean, one of the big issues in childcare, and in terms of how it's treated more broadly by the system we live under, is, I mean, you're correct that, you know, the majority of childcare workers are female. And I guess one of the things that's come out of that is that in a lot of feminized sort of industries, you know, the work is generally not valued, and, you know, hence why you have these sort of low kind of wages for workers. And you know, the work of care is generally just not valued under our kind of capitalist kind of system. So I guess I want to kind of hear the next question. I mean, I want to kind of hear more about, from a childcare worker's perspective, and especially within the union, what are the solutions that are needed to really, the real solutions that are needed to address the crisis in childcare?
Well, the most immediate solution that can be implemented right away is re-looking at and taking a deep dive into the ratios that we're currently working under. So the ratios that we currently work under are, again, designed for profit. They're not designed for best practice. So a deep dive into the ratios, but also removing something that's been referred to as under the roofline ratio. And that ratio allows unscrupulous, generally, for-profit centers to understaff their centers and say, oh, but we meet ratio as long as everyone in the building is in the building. And what that does is mean it makes that people who are working at the front desk, not with children in ratio, it means educators in one classroom are really responsible for children in another classroom, which they obviously can't do. They're not even in the same room. It means that supervision is poor. It means that workers are on their own with children, putting their own safety at risk and the safety of children at risk. It means that people aren't getting proper breaks and people aren't getting proper rest periods because they're the only people there. And that becomes it's all union issues, because that is an exploitation of workers to the most horrible degree. It's time that we as a society start valuing the work that carers do. And we saw that with the nurses' strike in the 80s, where, you know, it became that dedication doesn't pay the bills. Well, we're going to find a situation soon where parents can't go to work because we as educators can't pay our bills. We as educators are getting tired of bearing the brunt of a bad system. And we as educators are starting to finally stand up for ourselves. And we need to do it more. And we need to do it better. And we need to do it louder.
All right. Well, we'll go conclude this kind of interview. And I guess, do you have any kind of final comments you'd like to make, Nikki?
Yeah, the best thing for the sector is the removal of profit for care. If we can actually do that, if we can actually make a big change in the life of our children going forward, it's funding early childhood like we do public schools.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Nikki. I think this has been a very good and important interview. And yes, apologies to our listeners for just a bit of the technical kind of mishaps. But I think when I upload this as a podcast, I'll edit it so it's all one seamless thing. So yeah, thank you very much, Nikki, for this great interview. And all the solidarity with you, especially as someone who is also a childcare worker who works in school age care. Yeah, and a fellow union member.
Thank you.
Well, I hope our listeners enjoyed the interview with Nikki, and also classical community radio shenanigans that have just occurred. Before we move into our next interview, we're going to play another song. Thank you. Apologies. We did just mention this is community radio, folks, and these things happen. We are going to play another song for you. We've got Black Future by Aku Naru.
All right. Looking forward to it.
Pumani Matla aka Kitaboyak Fumani Matla aka such a one's eyes. Miki a little little Ki Ohamatla can a conceal for an uncle. Kimo Kaitseva Kimo Afrika. Miss Oshi, so killing sona Kisona, Kimu Kiton D. To whom?
Black future. Daughters of steam lineage.
besides the fast cars, the picket fence, Wilson picket engine number 9, picking cotton off the vine, pickers the fro flat on that one side, learn to laugh so you don't cry, your spell cast with closed eyes when the math never add up, a dollar short and hard to come by. Oh my goodness. For the Billy badass, brother outcast, the tough guy, for color girls when there ain't rolling up, that cloudy sunshine, the chip on your shoulder for those vocal and tongue tied, for broke girl and opus, magnum opus, stunning unmind, for those shrink to skin black as points of light in the night sky, a lunar eclipse, a grimace glimpse, the world shift, a sunrise, an ancient future reach between hips, thick and rough thighs, take the stand of lion, blow, make a wish for the whole pie, fuck the slice, shit the piece of cake, pecan and praline spice, casket nine lives, my cousin got life for 3 strikes, since 12 been in the system, 16 bars of heat, at 21 is gonna make them run like kids before the street light, cool 45, call me baby girl, try to maintain fine peace, white, man's world ain't a place for a nigga like me, it seems like what feels like is a state of mind, or the state of mind for me, Mike. My British friends call me wicked, either I'm evil or lit with it. Funky as George Clinton, fruit punch locks, fresh twisted. Giovanni Eagle trip, double dutch, skipping ride flow so intense, you need porn hub to fuck with it. So wherever get my nose stuck, I smell God shitting. Squad on that Farrakhan, Solange, Chimamanda, Trisha. My minimum be common sense to a gold getter, gold diggers, dig my pros and pose for the whole picture. Throw the scripture, Rosetta Stone, so go figure. Spend a lifetime trying to get free, like Denise Williams. Dead press, I got a bike right in the breeze. Chilling for my people, I go off Bonita over mischief. The counterfeit disappears soon as the cold hit them. Bomb a Genesis, Cyclone Time, signature gold tenant. Rosetta thought, finger pick, harmonic note bending. Train bound for glory, folklore, absolve the coke dealer. For Saint Santa, singers off key and on tender. Freddie Mercury, retrograde, too real for great pretenders. For dream defenders, sister soldier winters, codependent. We were young, dumb, innocent, and loved ones. Do you remember?
Yes, I remember.
Black future. May I forever be a menace to my enemies. Pray that deaths be nothing less than the final scene of misery. Last laugh, terrorist, the broadcaster, chariot, two sphinxes, straddle fence, my right hand, Brienne, Valerian. Keep my fist broad, did one of y'all to touch my hair again. Born Jamaican, yard core for soft candidates. For Alex Kizzy, Fiddler, Chicken, George, Kunta, the Gambian. For refuge, sword that brought Nina Simone to Liberia. For good Samaritans that go two suits to bury them. The rocket chair that stole years, shoulda, coulda, the terrier. Mouth full of black limbs, limp the posterior. For Erica, may your heart heal, we fell when you were here with us. For those church shoes and wooden pews, the breeze in the vestibule. Jesus show up, show out, Sunday best, he on schedule. Used to wonder where we left behind, did he forget us? Mama said, don't question the Lord, you open doors for the devil, boom. That chicken grease on deck, the old John to the left of you. Black as fat bags, sore pork, disease and vegetables. Cholesterol level of stress, believe gon' get the best of you. Precious as breath, neck poised as clear Huxtable. For the trauma on my sleeve, those haunted by memories, for chief lords, folk in between tribal wars. One lost the spirit, world called to intervene, guns drawn. The brown cross, the 6 degrees, separated those torn. Blood that pours, tears that run course, the wound, the sore, the bruise, the blues core. The muse in the dark, the me too, that Susan moves over to run a brook, rolls a pause. The things that fall apart, the conflict, unresolved as a space cap. A floor swept, the future for you right now.
We're back on Green Left Radio, 8:55 a.m. on your dial, and joining us now this morning is Markella Pengraves. Forgive me if I've incorrectly pronounced that, who is a member of Socialist Alliance and a trade union activist, calling us this morning from Adelaide. How are you this morning, Markella?
I'm well, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, well, not too bad. Not too bad. We've had a very eventful morning in the studio, so It's great to have you with us. Off the bat, sort of drawing on your recent article, how the Palestine Solidarity Movement can win, can you give us some of your comments on how the Palestine movement has broadened in the last 2 years?
Well, it's a broad movement because it involves people, everyday people from all across different fields of work, of age, of society. And I think it is a predominantly working class movement, and it's truly international at this stage. We see people from small towns in South America to Australia to Japan to London, everyday people getting out on the streets for Palestine. So it's definitely broad. Now, the thing about the movement is that it is still up against huge repression from many governments, most governments in the world. And it is striking that it is a movement that is against, in most countries, the ruling class of that country. So it's definitely a broad movement, and it's broadened out even deeper than it had been before October the 7th, as more and more people are waking up to the fact that there's a genocide happening to Palestinian people. More and more people are learning about Israel's apartheid system. More and more people are learning about the ongoing ethnic cleansing since at least 1948 and actually before in historic Palestine. And more people are actually becoming aware that settler colonialism and capitalism are the driving force of this, and they're starting to also reflect upon what's happening in Palestine in relation to what's happening in their own countries, such as here in Australia, where we've had the dispossession and genocide of Aboriginal people here. So I think there's a growing awareness. And I think that, however, we do need to get more organised so that we can win an end to this genocide.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, in my experience here in Melbourne, we're seeing broader and broader layers of people being brought into the movement. We're hearing from people who have never been political before in their lives, ostensibly, stepping up and actually becoming political organisers within their own communities as part of the Palestine movement. And as you said, not only making the links to, you know, what's happening in countries like Australia, but also, you know, all around the world, tying this to imperialism and developing an anti-capitalist sentiment, which is really quite astounding. And, you know, we're also seeing, you know, other communities who have experienced genocide, occupation of land, for instance, Elam Tamils as well. We're seeing immense, really beautiful solidarity there too. So you talked a little bit about some of the repression that the movement's facing, despite the high level of public support for the Palestine Solidarity Movement. You know, we got politicians around the world, from Keir Starmer in Britain and even in Australia, we're seeing them increasingly adopt more repressive policies targeting pro-Palestine protesters. And we're also seeing, in particular this week, and we've just talked about it earlier in the show, the conflation of pro-Palestine solidarity and, you know, anti-Israel critique. We're seeing this conflated with anti-Semitism. I'm just wondering if you have any comments about that.
Yes. So the conflation of anti-Semitism with Palestine solidarity, the accusation that anyone who wears a kefir or expresses solidarity with Palestine is anti-Semitic is vile. And it's a despicable way of deflecting support for Palestine. It's a way of silencing Palestine support, and it's also a way of insinuating that any critique of Israel is anti-Semitic. So it's a really manipulative and despicable tactic which the Zionists have been refining for many years, and it really is a way of undermining the movement and also undermining facts, forcing people into situations where they are concerned, everyday people are concerned. No one wants to be called anti-Semitic, and being anti-Semitic is wrong, obviously. So for a lot of everyday people, there's a real fear that, oh, I don't want to be accused of being anti-Semitic. So it has this automatically chilling and silencing effect, you know. The other thing is that there's many anti-Zionist Jews, such as we know in Australia, we have many groups such as the Jewish Council of Australia and Jews Against the Occupation 48, who are really strong that the Zionist conflation of Palestine solidarity with anti-Semitism is wrong. And they also have been really strong in saying that Zionism itself poses a threat to a real sense of Jewish faith. So that's just some things about the anti-Semitism. I've been working in the university sector where this conflation of anti-Semitism with anti-Zionism, so that if you are in a university context and you criticise Israel, there's been a push for universities to adopt this new definition of anti-Semitism, which directly conflates anti-Zionism with anti-Semitism. So this is a new definition which Universities Australia, which is the kind of big body which sort of has a governing aspect to university practice, they want to enforce this rule, which actually means that university staff and students will be restricted in what kind of speech they can have. And that means that if a university staff or student makes a criticism of Israel, saying, you know, Israel's enacting a genocide on the Palestinian people, that person could be accused of being anti-Semitic in the university context. And that comes with a lot of repercussions for university staff and students, such as, you know, in some cases, not being able to do your research, not being able to participate in university life, a threat to jobs and income, and for students, even a threat to losing their enrolment. So that's a big worry. And I just saw recently, actually it was yesterday, that came out that the anti-Semitism envoy, Gillian Siegel, who you might have spoken about this earlier in the program, you know, she's come out directly yesterday with this disgusting idea that, you know, people might be deported for not having the correct stance, according to her, on Israel. And, you know, she's directly basically calling for cutting funding for universities and artists for speaking up about what's happening in Palestine.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think it's also worth noting, you know, not only the effect on, you know, intellectuals and artists and so forth, but taking seriously the idea of democracy from below, the political activity of everyday people being stifled is certainly, you know, the question of who is able to critique is such a pertinent question. And, you know, this conflation of anti-Semitism as it's being used here is certainly a bulwark against, you know, pro-Palestine activists, just ordinary everyday people as well, being able to mount, you know, genuine political critiques of Zionism and, you know, primarily US imperialism. Mm. And yeah, as well, I'd like to just reiterate the comments that you've made about, you know, anti-Zionist Jews being a very prominent part of the pro-Palestine movement, which has been strongly against anti-Semitism. You know, it's a very frequently made comment that the pro-Palestine movement is not anti-Semitic, and it condemns anti-Semitism, while I think rightly pointing out, you know, the probably more prevalent and certainly more protected Islamophobia, anti-Arab, anti-Palestinian racism that we see in a country like Australia. So I just want to move on to the next question now. As a union activist, what are your comments on how we can push union leaders to take more collective action around Palestine?
This has been a big bugbear for me. I've been working very hard with other comrades within the National Tertiary Education Union to push for a BDS position, and we were successful in winning at our national council of that union last year a strong policy position, which puts the union in a position of officially an academic boycott of Israel, and also called for the union to push universities to cut ties with militaries that support the genocide in Israel, and also with weapons manufacturers. So this was really a strong position, and the academic boycott of Israel is in line with what Palestinians and Palestinian trade unions have been calling on us within the international union movement to do for many years now, since at least 2008. And this is in the NTEU, even though we had this strong position that was voted for by rank and file members, and rank and file members, there's a strong sense of we need to do more as a union for Palestine. Even though we were able to reach that goal of getting it put into our policy as a union, nothing has been done by the union executives, and they've in fact pushed back against many of the initiatives that ordinary members have made for Palestine solidarity. So this is not just an isolated case. It's happening in most unions in Australia, where we see, you know, within, for example, the Teachers Federation, how there's a rank and file push for more to be done, but it's been stifled. And, you know, there's two things that are causing this, in my opinion. So firstly, we're still not strong enough within the rank and file of the unions to really overcome what is actually anti-Palestinian sentiment and pro-Zionist sentiment within other sectors of the union. And the more probably, I think, the more pertinent issue is that many of the unions, if not all, are either officially or non-officially affiliated with the ALP, which means that they're towing the party line, as it were, on this issue of Palestine. So, for example, the NTEU is not officially affiliated with the ALP, but it does follow their line very closely. It is affiliated with the ACTU. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this has meant that with the ALP in power and taking the role of supporting the capitalist, it doesn't want to do anything to hurt its relationship with the US and with Israel. And this means that at the top levels of the union leadership, they're unwilling to support members who want to do things which are directly in contradiction to the ALP and the government. So this is a massive issue for us within the movement, because it means we have zero institutional support. And this is in contradistinction to what happened in the Vietnam movement, where there was institutional support for the struggle for Vietnam.
Yeah, absolutely. This does represent a massive obstacle that unionists are faced with. We are running short on time for the interview, so I just wanted to ask if you could quickly let listeners know if you have any comments as an artist about the fearless role that other artists are currently playing in standing up for Palestine.
Yeah, I think this is actually a complicated question, because there is, again, like in the rest of Australian society, a big rift between the art establishment and everyday artists and art workers who are have been pushing Palestine solidarity. So with the Khaled Sabzi issue that happened recently, he's just been reinstated for the Venice Biennale, and that his reinstatement was due to the pushback from everyday activists and artists who were outraged that he was stripped of this Venice Biennale role, which is the most prestigious artistic sort of medal, as it were, in Australia, where you get to present your work at the Venice Biennale on behalf of the country. So he was stripped of that because of his support for Palestine, and because he is a Lebanese person, and he has made artwork which is slightly provocative according to certain politicians. So artists are pushing back against the status quo, and they're trying to voice, truth to power, basically.
Yeah, awesome. Thank you so much, Makela. Before we let you go, you have requested that we play a song, Humble by the Sun, Humble as the Sun by Bob Villain. Would you like to give a quick introduction to the song before we play it for the listeners?
Yeah, and this is a real example of artists being fearless, or just saying, F off to the people who say we can't speak out against Palestine. And I think what we saw with Bob Villain at Glastonbury was just expressing the sentiment that everyday people feel. Yes, they do feel deaf to the IDF. Yes, they do feel that Palestine needs to be free, that we need to express support for Palestinian people. And I think, it's really fantastic that we have some prominent artists which are inspiring young people especially to get up and make a noise and resist imperialism, resist capitalism, and try to do what they can to fight for Palestinian liberation.
Awesome. Thank you so much for being on Green Left Radio, 3CR 855 AM on your dial. That was Makela from Socialist Alliance. And this is Humble as the Sun by Bob Villain.
Thanks, Jordan.
It's easy to say I love you when you hate yourself, face yourself, born of a loving woman, but I had to make myself. Nobody put food in my mouth or money in my pocket, hit the plug up like a socket and I paid myself, laid to rest my insecurities like racist bars, they never served me. I grew around some animals, my habitat disturbed me, lions, tigers and bear man on their separate journeys, until their paths cross and end up on separate gurneys. My father read me like a book while others tried to burn me. He sat me down and offered me advice when he spoke firmly. Son, never let them make you what they want for you to be. So I replaced the noose with gold chains, just wanting to be free. I accomplished all my dreams and invited my friends to see, in hopes I could inspire like the fire ignited under me. I combust my heart filled with love, my gut filled with kombucha. Let my words ferment, sip them slow and end up looser. Losers sitting in a stupor, wasting time behind computers. Angry how I rolled the dice, gambled with my future and it worked out. I swear I shine so bright, they want me burnt out.
humble as the sun. I come, the flowers grow, the birds out, the weak are quick to speak, till the strong walk in the room, and like dictionaries glued, they're having trouble getting words out. Thank God that I made it out alive. Didn't have to sell my soul, yeah, I made it out with pride. While them other man are lying, I can see it in their eyes. Shake my locks like a mane, feeling Gucci, looking fine. I'ma shine, black man shine, completing my goals on black man time. No blacks, no dogs, but the Irish are fine, so long as they don't rise. Chocolate, that's right, our day will come. Said I'm as humble as the sun. The album went to 18, but they know I'm number one. Meditate on stage and with no smoke up in my lungs. Watch how I take a drag on beats, proceed to bun down Babylon. I said I bun it down, now watch me as I fight back. For every reggae artist that never got their rights back, that died broken hungry on the island of Jamaica, while some Wanna Island Records made a killing off the right tracks. Fuck that! Let the sun shine upon my face. Who would have thought my dark skin would brighten up this place? Gets told me I'm electric like I'm lightning in this place. Seconds after talking to Sadiq about strikes up in this place. How you feeling? How you feeling? It's the one and truly living. With so much life left to live, somebody might just try to kill him. Where I spout off at the mouth wouldn't really be surprising. But the sun is fucking rising. I'ma melt this glass ceiling. Watch me shine.
Shine, black man, shine. I'ma shine, shine, shine. Shine, black man, shine. Let them sing it like
shine, black man, shine. Shine, black man, shine.
Welcome back to Green Left Radio. You're listening to 3CR 8:55 a.m. on your dial, and we just heard Humble as the Sun by Bob Villain. We're now going to go to an interview with Peter Drenth from the United Workers Union, who is a worker at the Grill Workers, at Grill, sorry. And we've just got Peter joining us now. So welcome to the studio, Pete.
Hi, how you doing?
Hello, good, thank you. So you're speaking with Stephanie here, and can you explain for our listeners what's been happening, particularly for young workers who are working at Grilled?
Yeah, at the moment we're renegotiating our enterprise agreement with Grilled, and particularly in a long process which has been going on since almost a year now, since last year when they initially proposed a new EA. We weren't happy with it back then, and it did get voted up, but we as a union contested it, and it initially got dismissed, and now we've been negotiating a new one this year, and again, it's just kind of really leaving young workers in a very sort of like risky position, and so we've been taking action to kind of get the message out that Grilled is trying to take advantage of young workers.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for explaining that, Peter. And I mean, that's awful to hear that this has been going on for a year, and just like, you know, in the current context of a cost of living crisis. But I'd be really curious, like, can you kind of explain around the rates and how, so there's, my understanding is right, there's junior rates and there's then traineeship rates, yep, as well, aren't there? Can you just sort of explain that for our listeners?
So it's long been known that grills run a traineeship that generally keeps young workers very below the award. Traineeship is basically it non-negotiable. Like once you get employed by Grilled for the first time, you put on the traineeship. They say it's for you know, the benefit of, like, if somebody doesn't have any hospitality experience, they're able to take on that person, but they'll put anyone on it. It doesn't matter how much experience you have. And then you're on that traineeship for a minimum of 12 months before you're put on a full rate, which is a long time to not be paid at a full rate.
Yeah, that's awful. And what sort of rates are we talking, if just to give our listeners a bit of a picture?
At the moment, it stands around about for a young person. It seems like at its lowest, it's around about $11 an hour.
$11 an hour, and like you're just saying, this isn't just for people who've never worked in the hospitality sector before. Although, I mean, the whole idea of like having to have experience for everything before you can even start working in a casual job in a fast food sector. And why do you need a traineeship anyway? Like, I'm really curious. I mean, like, there's obviously things that you have to learn, but you have to learn things in any job that you work in, right? It just sounds, well, it's discriminatory is what I'm hearing. Mm. Is that kind of your sense of it as well?
Well, there's just, it's not necessary for the job. A lot of the training that you need to do the job is done on site, and as it stands, there's not really anything wrong for a Cert 3, but you can go do a Cert 3 for like $600, and then it'd be done in a few months, rather than being stuck on, and then you'll have the same Cert 3 in hospitality, going through a decent sort of like tertiary institution, and then not have to wait 12 months to complete a Cert 3. It's just crazy.
So obviously this unfairly targets junior workers and younger workers, but I guess I'd also be curious, because this also has an impact on older workers too, if they're being overlooked because Grilled is able to, you know, keep their running costs low by employing younger people on trainee wages. Is that something that you would kind of agree with, that it's problematic for all workers, right? It doesn't matter.
It
has a flow-on effect, doesn't it?
I think it's problematic as in terms of kind of in quantifying the value of a worker and breaking them down just to sort of as a commodity.
Yeah.
The idea of it is to basically just cut costs, labor costs. And then it just turns real people into numbers. And of course it's like it's a whole stock traineeship. a lot of trainees will be doing the same work that a full.
Hello, Peter. You still there?
It just becomes sort of like an unfair environment for sure.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, yeah, and just another way that young people I think systematically discriminated against. It's really, really poor. But I guess the really positive thing about this, though, is to hear just how resilient the workers are and that they're coming together, they're taking industrial action. Can you tell us about the upcoming strike action and how our listeners can get involved?
Interestingly enough, the first strike action we took was last year, and that was the first fast food strike in this country.
Wow.
Which is really cool.
Yeah, that is amazing.
We've subsequently taken this year, we've striked, and the first strike was like just one store, which was the store I work at, and now we've done subsequently two more strikes with stores all across the country going on strike, which is the movement's growing, which is amazing. Right now we're at a point where the EA has been moved to its access period. And in the next sort of like coming week or so, we'll have to vote on it, and we're pushing for a no campaign, a no vote on that EA, because it's a lot of the sort of process of the bargaining is very sort of like not a lot of sort of like compromise and actual sort of like fair, good faith bargaining from Guild.
Yeah.
So at the moment, we'll probably be looking to take action to try to spread the word of a no vote to all workers.
Mm.
And if people, the best way people can get involved at the moment is to really kind of hot Guild, send in feedback telling them to really kind of consider young workers.
Yeah.
And if anybody wants to support us, a Instagram, the Grilled United Workers Instagram page, where we're always looking for support and just to anybody they know that's struggling at any sort of Grilled or even any sort of like quick service restaurant and they need support, please follow us.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and there's a specific strike that's coming up, isn't there? Did you want to give our listeners the details for that?
I believe striking in the next week or so. It'll just be a walk off, so we can get to other restaurants and spread the word of the no vote.
Yeah. Okay. Hang on. Let me just double check. We just want to make sure that we get the date and time for anyone who's available to support that. So it's a 24-hour strike, right? Is that right? Grilled in Flinders Lane? Oh, that's
no,
been and gone. Sorry. Yep.
Yeah. No. So sorry. Because as far as I know, we haven't really got time for any action.
Oh, okay.
So that 24-hour strike was. We've done a 24-hour strike not last week, the week before.
Yeah.
And then we did another strike from 5 to 12 a.m. Last week. And that was not just Flinders Lane, that was all stores from around the country we had. And we also had strikes in last Saturday in Queensland and New South Wales as well.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, no worries. Yeah, so just for our listeners again, there's a grilledworkersunited.org website there's also, you mentioned the Instagram page that people can follow, and also on Facebook, Real Workers United. So important for our listeners to follow that on social media and support yourself, Peter, and all your comrades who are fighting for better pay and conditions and just an end to this like ridiculous exploitation that's happening. But yeah, thank you so much for joining us today and like sharing everything that's going on at Grilled. Yeah, we're sending all our support and solidarity to you guys. And yeah, thanks for your time.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Oh, absolute pleasure. Have an amazing day. Thanks, Peter.
You too.
Okay.
Thank you. Bye.
Breadline, the new show from the Australian Unemployed Workers Union.
So put down that job plan and listen to us.
6 p.m. every Monday night on 3CR Community Radio.
Your voice print to access your account when you call us.
3CR. You're listening to 3CR, 8:55 a.m. on your dial. It is 8:22 a.m. Friday, the 11th of June, and that can only mean one thing, dear listeners. It is time for the Green Left Activist Calendar. So let me just put my glasses on so listeners will hear me better. Starting today, Friday the 11th of July, there is a NAIDOC Week March that's happening at 10 a.m. at the Victorian Aboriginal Health Services.
And just for our listeners on that, it may start at 10 a.m., but the march actually starts at 12 p.m., so that's what's been stated by the organisers. So for anyone who's sort of listening right now, you can come down anytime between 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. And yeah, so you don't have to worry about being late for this action. And usually it's quite a good experience going there from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. because usually you can check out the Victorian Aboriginal Health Centre service. And then, yeah, there'll probably be speeches, possibly a smoking ceremony, and also be some other kind of things happening.
Yeah, so you heard it here. You don't need to worry about being late and you don't need to worry about being early. You'll have a good time no matter when you rock up. So that's at the Victorian Aboriginal Health Services, 186 Nicholson Street, Fitzroy. There will be a online discussion, Capitalism, Socialism and the Socialist Alliance, 5:30 p.m. That's online via Zoom. You can head to the Green Left website under the events tab to find out more about that. And there will be a film screening of Fedayeen, a film about Georges Abdallah, at 6:30 p.m. at the Greek Democritus Workers League. That's 583 High Street, Northcote. Tomorrow, Saturday, 12th of July, there will be a very important fundraiser. This is the 3CR Solidarity Breakfast Raffle and Live Gig Extravaganza, 3 p.m. at the Greek Democritus Workers League. Again, 583 High Street, Northcote. Help keep Radical Radio on the air. And tune in on Saturday mornings as well, by the way, for Solidarity Breakfast. Then we have Sunday, 13th of July. There will be a rally, Stand Against Emergency Service Tax, 10:30 a.m. Kelly Park, Sinnott Street, Werribee. Wednesday, the 16th of July, there will be a rally, No New Coal and Gas, 10:30 p.m. outside Gabriel Ng's office in Menzies, 651, 653 Doncaster Road, Doncaster. And also a rally, Stop Torturing Our Imprisoned Women, Corrections Victoria. That's 12 p.m. at Correction Victoria's head office, 121 Exhibition Street in the city. There will, just skipping ahead due to time, Saturday the 19th of July, there will be a speak out, 12 years too long, refugees are welcome here, 2 p.m. at Burke Street Mall on the corner of Burke Street and Swanson Streets. There will be a Liberation Lit Club that day. One day, everyone will have been against this at 2 p.m. at Black Sparks Cultural Centre, 26A Gladstone Avenue, Northcote. And that night, there will be a double feature film screening of Palestinians Don't Need Sidewalks and The Doctor's Wife, 5:30 p.m. at the Cinema Nova, 380 Lygon Street, Canberra. Sunday, July 20th until Tuesday, July 22nd will be the convergence on Canberra. Join the united call to sanction Israel in response to the genocide on Palestine. Activists will be congregating from around the country at Parliament House in Canberra. There will also on Thursday, July 24th, be a conference, Treaty of Lausanne, Partition, Denial, Massacre, Kurdish Struggle and the Future of Kurdistan, 9 a.m. at Victoria University Theatre, M0011, Footscray Park, 70 Ballarat Road, Footscray. And then jumping ahead to July 26, there will be an important event, a celebration of independent and activist media in Geelong, at the Geelong Trades Hall. That's 127 Meyer Street, Geelong, and that is a Green Left fundraiser. So if you like the work we do, if you like Green Left, if you're in Geelong, or if you don't mind going to Geelong, consider supporting that event. Saturday, August 2nd, there will be a very important rally, Hands Off Public Housing, 11 a.m. at the State Library on Swanston Street. Then on Wednesday, 6th of August, there will be a vigil, 80 years since Hiroshima Day, 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. St. Paul's Cathedral on the corner of Swanston Street and Flinders Lane. Then Saturday, August 9th, there will be two important actions happening that day. There will be a rally in Dandenong Market, 12 p.m. That day, and there will also be the Green Left comedy debate. Billionaires should run the government. Comedians will assemble to put forward the most comprehensive arguments for or against this age-old question. 6:30 p.m. Brunswick Town Hall. That's 223 Sydney Road, Brunswick. And that's just about going to wrap up the Green Left activist calendar for this week. So,
and you can always find more details at greenleft.org.au/events, because there's many more exciting events happening in Melbourne and around the country.
All the time. So we want to thank our listeners for tuning in this week.
We want to thank Peter. We want to thank
Markella. We want to thank Nikki
for joining us.
And we want to thank also not just those who are tuning in. Not everyone's a morning person. If you're listening to this on a podcast, we want to thank you too. If you enjoy the work that we do, if you enjoy this program, then consider subscribing to Green Left and 3CR. You know, this is where you will get the kind of news coverage analysis that you will not hear in the mainstream. This is people-powered, grassroots, independent media. So it's very important to head on over to greenleft.org.au and subscribe there, or head over to 3cr.org.au and consider becoming a subscriber. And if you're already a subscriber to both of these, we won't say no to a donation. So thanks again, everybody. Stay tuned to Left After Breakfast.
This brings us to the end of the show. You have been listening to Friday Morning Breakfast with Green Left Radio, brought to you by Green Left Weekly Newspaper, which brings an alternative source of information that puts people and planet before profit.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.